Today's topic is physical and chemical vapor deposition.
Today's discussion will cover an introduction to plasma deposition. We'll talk about coverage, the six basic steps of CVD, film growth, issues concerning deposition, and then types of PECVD deposition. So again, CVD is chemical vapor deposition. PECVD is simply plasma enhanced chemical vapor deposition. So as an introduction, plasma processes can be used to do several things. We can harness the power of plasma to deposit material, such as what we're discussing today, PECVD. We can also use it to remove materials, such as reactive ion etching or ashing if they're hydrocarbon materials. We can also modify the surface through bombardment. Okay, we can use a bias to cause this physical bombardment. Or we can use the plasma to chemically modify the surface. All these scenarios are quite complex chemical and physical processes. And generally, the consequences occurring during any planned process are complex. But we design recipes so that one desired result will dominate the process. So, plasma-enhanced chemical vapor deposition. Again, this is only one type of process that we can use, one example of using plasma. So it's the deposition of films using plasma, which offers a unique combination of low temperature and good film composition and coverage. Some PECVD systems actually have the ability to etch and clean the substrate prior to the deposition, thus reducing contamination. So what we're saying is some of these PECVD systems can actually act as an etch tool just before the deposition, and this dramatically reduces contamination. So as an introduction, we use RF power to break up gas molecules within a chamber under vacuum. The molecular fragments and radicals now can readily bond to other atoms and form a thin film at the substrate surface. The gaseous byproducts of the chemical reaction will be removed by the vacuum pumping system, and also the substrate may be heated to increase the surface reactions and drive out the contaminants. So we're basically using the plasma to create these high energy radicals, which can bond to form a new thin film. And vacuum is important to control the pressures at which this occurs, and then also for pumping out the gaseous byproducts and pumping in the reactants. Next up on our discussion will be deposition coverage, another important aspect of PECVD. So one key quality issue in any deposition is step coverage. And this basically refers to the thickness of a deposited material over features relative to the thickness on the top surface. So this is easier explained if we look at an example here. So this diagram should help us understand what we mean by step coverage. What we see below are a couple features and then a thin film which was deposited over these features. As you can see, it's thicker in some regions, thinner in others, and we use these terms, step coverage, to describe the size of these coverage areas. So sidewall step coverage is A over B times 100. Bottom step coverage would be D over B times 100. And then conformality or conformal step coverage gives us a ratio of A over C times 100. So each of these types of coverage would be represented as a percentage. And they tell us about how uniform our film is around different areas of our feature. So related to that is deposition uniformity. It's important to ensure uniform coverage. So some ways to do this are to heat the substrate chuck. This helps to control the morphology of the deposition and gives us more uniform step coverage. And also, plasma ion bombardment is used to increase the mobility of ad atoms. So what this means is as these materials kind of start to form the thin film at the surface, The plasma ion bombardment basically provides more energy to allow these ad atoms to kind of diffuse across the surface. So when you have increased mobility, you have greater diffusion and more uniform coverage. So now let's discuss the six basic steps of chemical vapor deposition. The major steps are, and this will make more sense in a slide or two when we view a diagram, but the first step is that the vapor or the bulk gas diffuses down towards the surface. The second step is the adsorption of a film precursor onto our substrate. The third step would be surface diffusion, which we kind of just briefly mentioned. The fourth step is nucleation and island growth. Step five is desorption of reaction products or byproducts. And then the sixth step would be diffusion of the reactant products into the bulk gas, where they'd finally be swept away by vacuum. So if we look at this diagram, we can kind of make more sense of those six steps. In the top of the diagram, we see the kind of process gases flowing across. This would be the top of our chamber, for example. On the left, we have a little stagnant layer. And towards the top, you see some things happening. You see gas phase nucleation, which in this case may be a undesired effect. Step number one, we see precursor diffusion as the gaseous precursors diffuse down towards our substrate. Number two, we see adsorption of the film precursor, so it's being adsorbed to the film precursor. That's the ad atom is being adsorbed. Step three, we have surface diffusion, which again can be aided by the ion bombardment and also by heating the chuck. Where did step four go? There it is, nucleation and island growth. So after adsorption and diffusion, they start to nucleate and kind of agglomerate into islands. There can also be precursor desorption. That's the precursor leaving before nucleation has occurred. Then step five would be the desorption of the reaction byproducts. So the byproducts of the reaction are leaving the surface of the growing film. And finally, step six, diffusion of these reaction products into the bulk, which the pump will remove from the system. So this six-step process is a continuous thing. All these steps are occurring somewhat simultaneously once the process has initiated, and it continues until the reactions are complete or you stop providing process gases. Next topic is film growth. So how does film grow? How is a film formed? So given enough time and surface mobility, a deposited film will grow in three distinct stages. Nucleation, which we saw on the last slide, island growth, which we also kind of saw, and coalescence. So given enough time and surface mobility, a deposited film will grow in these stages. The first stage of thin film growth is nucleation. This is where clusters of stable nuclei are formed on the substrate surface. So if you imagine these ad atoms coming down to the surface, kind of one at a time, if they're given enough time and energy for diffusion, they'll start to form small clusters of nuclei, and this is called nucleation. Up next would be island growth. This is the second stage of thin film growth. Now stable nuclei kind of grow into larger, what are called island clusters, and kind of propagation and formation of island growth is based on surface mobility and density. And again, we can enhance surface mobility by heating the chuck and also providing energy from ion bombardment. Lastly, the final stage is coalescence. It's the last stage in thin film growth, where island clusters further kind of agglomerate or coalesce and combine to eventually form a continuous film, which was our primary goal, to form a continuous kind of uniform film. Up next in our discussion are possible issues that we should be concerned with whenever doing a PECVD deposition. So some quality issues in chemical vapor deposition include film density, film stress, included contaminants during our deposition, and also surface damage, which may occur. Some advantages of PECVD are we can operate at lower processing temperatures, let's say from 150 to 450 degrees Celsius. This gives us a wide range of applications, and it allows us to work on materials with kind of lower melting points. We can achieve excellent gap fill for high aspect ratio gaps using low density plasma. We have good film adhesion to the substrate. We have high deposition rates, so it's a quickly occurring type of deposition. And we can have high film density due to few pinholes and voids. So if done correctly, we can have a highly dense film. Some limitations, though. Besides the expected substrate damage from ion bombardment, PECVD has a tendency to create voids and trenches. So there is this tendency. Void creation is a function of the mean free path. So in the diagram below, we see a little keyhole defect. This is a void in our material. And changing the mean free path, or basically the pressure within the system, will kind of alter the number of voids or the possibility, the chances of void creation. So here's a diagram showing voids and mean free path. If we have a balanced mean free path, we have time for rapid surface migration, and we see kind of uniform conformal step coverage here. Below, we see the result of having a long mean free path, so a lower pressure with no surface migration. And lastly, we see the result of having a short mean free path, or higher pressure than we would want, and no surface migration. So these are all kind of types of coverage that could occur and will occur when we change or alter the processing pressures during PECVD. So let's talk a little bit about PECVD and photoresist. So in etching, we actually learned that photoresist could be desirable and actually useful for giving us a nice nice trench or etch profile, depending on what type of etch we want. But in PECVD, photoresist is actually undesirable. Besides the thermal flow due to a heated substrate chuck, the plasma will actually react with the photoresist. This results in a volatile product that contaminates the film. So the plasma will basically react with the photoresist, which is basically some type of hydrocarbon polymer. And this produces a volatile product, so a gaseous product. And this can greatly contaminate our film that we're trying to grow or deposit. So here's a little diagram. We see photoresist reacting with the plasma while our film is being deposited, and it will end up, the photoresist will end up becoming little contaminations in our deposited film. So lastly, we're going to discuss several types of PECVD deposition. So depending on what type of material we're trying to deposit, there are a multitude of materials we can use, and we use them for different reasons. For example, if you want to deposit polysilicon, this is often done for use as a gate material in semiconductor devices. It's also used as a flexible material for MEMS, microelectrical mechanical systems. Silicon nitride is a common go-to material for producing an effective diffusion barrier to ions. Silicon dioxide is a great, very common dielectric layer used in many micro and nano components. Borosilicate glass is used to produce certain films. Also phosphosilicate glass, borophosphosilicate glass. And tungsten is laid down by PECVD. It's used for via fills or barrier metals. And also tungsten plugs and things of that nature. Copper is used and rapidly replacing aluminum as a metal conductor in many micro and nano devices. So let's discuss these in a little bit more detail. Thinking back about polysilicon PECVD, polysilicon contains many small single crystal regions that are separated by grain boundaries. So these small grains do have order, but there's no long-term order throughout polysilicon. Doped polysilicon typically serves as a gate electrode in MOS devices. That's metal oxide semiconductor. And in that case, the metal would not be a metal, but it would be the polysilicon acting, serving that purpose. Polysilicon is also a popular flexible material for MEMS applications, as we mentioned previously. So, if you want to deposit polysilicon by PECVD, we do this by a decomposition reaction. We start with silane as a precursor, that's SiH4. That's basically bringing in our silicon in the gas phase. Upon exposure to RF, silane decomposes into solid silicon and hydrogen gas. So basically, the solid silicon is being deposited as that highly reactive atom, and the hydrogen gas kind of acts as a silicon carrier, bringing it to the surface and then leaving as a byproduct. Substrate chuck is typically heated above 580°C to ensure the proper polycrystalline structure is realized. So down below we see a little chemical equation where you have silane gas decomposing into solid silicon and two hydrogen molecules as our gas. Nanocrystalline silicon has smaller grains of crystalline silicon within the amorphous phase. The grains are less than 100 nanometers. So what's interesting about this material is it behaves like a discrete gap semiconductor. Nanocrystalline silicon has electron mobility much greater than that of amorphous silicon, and it's found in popular use in solar cells due to its strong light absorption properties. So it has great electron mobility and strong light absorption properties. Silicon nitride, another common material deposited by PECVD. We said it's used as a final passivation layer on chips for scratch protection. It's used as a moisture barrier. It's used for radiation shielding and also a barrier against sodium diffusion, which can really wreak havoc on different metal parts of a product. PECVD nitride contains hydrogen. It can range from 9% to 30%, and this can degrade the film. And PECVD nitride is also exposed to greater compressive stress due to ion bombardment. This can cause voids and cracks in underlying layers. So if we look at silicon nitride here, and we compare PECVD versus LPCVD, which is low pressure chemical vapor deposition and does not use a plasma for its energy source, we can look at these two processes and compare some things like deposition temperature. LPCVD is 700 to 800 degrees Celsius, while PECVD is 300 to 400. If we look at composition, LPCVD is Si3N4. Stoichiometric, and if you look at PECVD, it's Si, H, and N, and the stoichiometric coefficients can change depending on your percent of hydrogen. Step coverage in LPCVD is fair. PECVD is conformal, so that's better there. And stress at 23 degrees Celsius on silicon, if we look in dynes per centimeter squared, we're around 1 or 2 times 10 to the 10 for LPCVD, and 1 to 8 times 10 to the 9 for PECVD. So, silicon nitride, PECVD, this is formed by reacting silane with either ammonia or nitrogen. So what happens is using nitrogen reduces the amount of hydrogen in the film, but it's difficult to dissociate. So if we bring in silane gas with ammonia, for example, we get this SiHn solid plus hydrogen gas. If we bring in silane and react it with nitrogen, we get some similar mixture and hydrogen gas. But using the nitrogen, again, reduces the amount of hydrogen, but it's more difficult to dissociate. So here's an example nitride PECVD recipe. Some common things about PECVD are that there will be multiple steps. So if you look at the first step, we look at the time. We have a pressure in torr, typical chamber temperature, substrate temperature, which is, remember, heated to promote kind of uniform deposition. Power, which in the first step, it's not on, basically. And we're running 4,000 standard cubic centimeters per minute. That's our flow rate of the incoming gases. We also have we have nitrogen, ammonia, and silane coming in. In step two, we turn on the power for 2 seconds in this case. In step three, we kind of change the power. And if you look at the flow rates, they change somewhat for ammonia and silane. We continue going on. You see step five, and then finally at step six, there's no power. Pressure is dropped, and we're kind of at the end of our reaction. Silicon dioxide PECVD. This forms an oxide by reacting silane with either oxygen or nitrous oxide or carbon dioxide, always in a plasma. The oxide could also be doped with boron or phosphorus in the form of diborane and phosphine to form BSG or PSG respectively. So this is a borosilicate glass or phosphosilicate glass. So oxygen is generally actually not used due to its ability to readily react in the gas phase. This would generate particles that promote poor film quality. Instead, we use N2O as a preferred reactant due to its ability to produce a higher quality film. So at the bottom, we see the reaction. We bring in silane gas, 2N2O in the gas phase. Again, these are precursors. And the result is silicon dioxide deposited as a solid film, nitrogen and hydrogen gas as the byproducts of the reaction, which diffuse and then are pumped away by vacuum. Tungsten PECVD, as we mentioned, this can occur. Tungsten is actually a refractory metal. It's got a melting point of some 3,410 degrees Celsius, and it's widely used in multi-level metal structures as an interconnects in integrated chips and also as a barrier metal. So the good qualities of tungsten are that it's very highly conductive, it's got excellent thermal capabilities, and it can be deposited with good step coverage by PECVD. The deposition via PECVD is a fairly simple process. We bring in tungsten hexafluoride, that's WF6, react it with hydrogen, and the resulting product is solid tungsten, which is deposited, and then a hydrofluoric acid vapor, which can be carried off again by vacuum. Copper PECVD, as we mentioned, is replacing aluminum as a metal conductor of choice in high-speed devices. The qualities of copper are excellent conductivity, low production cost, and also good step coverage. So copper PECVD is the most common method of copper deposition. This is done by taking a metal organic bishexafluoroacetylacetonate copper, written as CuHVAC2, and it's placed into the system in a powder form and is mixed with hydrogen gas, then vaporized, and then carried into the reaction chamber. So we have to take this this metal organic, again, in a powder phase, mix it with hydrogen gas, vaporize it, and then we bring it into the reaction chamber for PECVD. So down below, we're just showing the reaction to get us to CuHVAC, and then inside the chamber, we would be depositing solid copper, and we would have that byproduct of 2HHVAC. So this ends our discussion of material fabrication using plasma-enhanced chemical vapor deposition.